Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio, 103.1 FM, 910, 980 AM, or anywhere on that free Odyssey app. It is 410, 80 degrees on this Friday, May 16th, 2025. If you're not done already, you're almost done. Don't worry about it. The weekend is upon us. A little mix sun clouds. You hear some storms may come through again later on. I said just by the time I get home, about 7 o'clock, no grass cutting today for Rob. Simple as that. Did get a text message in, said, you and your sea monkeys. eBay has many. Basic packs for $12. You provide the fish bowl or fancy plastic aquarium for $25, $30. There's a lot for sale. Then the vintage section from when we were kids, they get very expensive. Listen, I'm bringing sea monkeys back. It's simple as that. Check them out if you don't know what I'm talking about. But I think we should make them a thing again. Bring them to the next generation. Let it be a fad again. I think we need something to believe in. Let's get the sea monkeys back in. Come on now. There is some breaking news. Yes, there is serious breaking news. The Supreme Court today blocked President Trump from moving forward with deportation under the 1798 Alien Enemies Act for a group of immigrants in northern Texas, siding with the Venezuelan immigrants who feared they were poised for imminent removal under the sweeping wartime authority. The Supreme Court did state that they could not be deported under that act while the case goes through the lower court, which it was kicked back to. That being said, the Supreme Court did specifically say that the administration can remove these Venezuelan immigrants under other statutes under immigration law. So it appears that they're saying this group cannot be removed under the 1798 Alien Enemies Act, but they could be removed under other immigration laws, but as they can't be removed under the Immigration Act while it moves through the court. So that's the breaking news out of the Supreme Court. My guess would be that the administration moves to deport them under existing immigration law, not using the Immigration Alien Enemies Act of 1798, while it works through the court. And we'll see what the lower court says. It'll probably end up back in the Supreme Court regardless. So that's some breaking news there today. This is some more good news for us here in Pennsylvania, although some won't like it. Northeast Pennsylvania, NEPA, could become a major supplier of lithium for batteries. There's been a successful pilot project in Northeast Pennsylvania. And I think we've mentioned this a couple months ago when it was going through its processes, to where lithium is extracted from the brine used in fracking. Now, lithium, a key component in electric vehicle batteries, and less dependent on importing this precious element, this rare earth element, from other nations, specifically Russia, China, and other places. The extraction of lithium and some other elements from fracking wastewater at a pilot plant in Susquehanna County, after a month of continuous operation, has been a resounding success, according to a new release from Avonlea Lithium, a subsidiary of Avalon Environmental Technologies. Fracking, or hydraulic fracking, is a process used to extract oil and natural gas from deep underground rock formations. It involves injecting a mixture of water, sand, and chemicals at high pressure into the wells, creating fractures in the rock, allowing the trapped gas and oil to flow more freely. We're pretty up to tune in this because it's been an ongoing battle in our area and across Pennsylvania and across a lot of places for a while. There was a lot of activity up by me and even north of me now, still today, and to the west of us. This just and one of the big things when it comes to fracking is what to do with that wastewater, what to do with the fracking chemicals and the trucks were bringing it out. If they can bring it to a place and find a secondary use for it and extract a very well-needed rare earth mineral like lithium, and it's not just lithium, this will be a win-win for our area. It'll be a huge boost because a major cost in fracking and getting that gas and oil out was what to do with the wastewater, how to send it somewhere, to get it treated. if we could do that and extract rare, if it could, that cost could be actually making money in addition to not costing money, there's that much more of a benefit to when it comes to this. The Innovation Mineral Extraction System, known as Advanced Chemical Cavitation Extraction of Lithium, ACCLEI for short, has exceeded performance expectations, marking a transformative milestone for domestic lithium and critical mineral production in the United States. The plant processed thousands of liters of wastewater brine daily from the Marcellus Shale natural gas operations using a proprietary hydrodynamic cavitation technology. The system efficiently extracts lithium, strontium, magnesium, calcium, and barium from fracking brine that would otherwise be discarded. Pennsylvania's Marcellus Shale fields stretch from the northern tier counties to the southwestern counties. The underground rock formation also extends into parts of New York, Ohio, West Virginia, Maryland, and Virginia. The lithium contained in the Marcellus Shale brine in Pennsylvania could meet 38 to 40% of the country's current lithium demand, assuming that 100% lithium recovery and extraction processes are more cost-effective than competing uses for the water, according to an analysis and researchers from the University of Pittsburgh and the National Energy Technology Laboratory in Pittsburgh. The company's technology positions Pennsylvania as a cornerstone of America's clean energy transition, offering a scalable solution to reduce reliance on foreign mineral imports, the company said. The pilot demonstrates that the system's ability to deliver commercially viable, environmentally responsible mineral extraction. The results not only validate our technology, but also underscore the potential for Pennsylvania to lead in critical mineral innovation. Now, my question is here now, too. If you have a gas lease on your property, if you're a farmer in Upper Lackawanna County, Susquehanna County, and one of our counties to our west, you have 400 acres and you have a gas and you have the rights and the gas well's there, and you're getting a percentage of the gas that's produced from the wells from your field that your property may be part of. If they're also extracting rare earth minerals from the wastewater from that very same, that could be an added benefit to the homeowners. Now, if you've never had a gas lease on your property, it's hard for you to understand what this entails. Now, all the area up near me had gas leases at one time or another. My gas lease expired a couple of years ago, but I had it for a decade. And, you know, they pay you per acre, and then you get residuals to whatever gas is extracted from underneath if they extract gas. Now, because of the anti-fracking, because of the cost and shipping and everything, and the low cost of oil at the time, a lot of the wells, a lot of the things up there, and the lack of a pipeline were abandoned in a lot of places. Now, a lot of them weren't. But my thing is, since they are getting a rare earth mineral from the same ground and field under your property, does that also transition to benefiting local property owners? It very well could. And I think this is going to be a legal issue. And if your contract for your land lease states that it's just gas and oil, hopefully, and I believe mine did because I just looked at it the other day, also said rare earth minerals. So if anything else is found, if anything else is extracted from that, you also get a percentage of that. Now, that would probably have to be tweaked because this technology didn't exist. Again, my lease is probably gone now for 8 years over. But this could be a big boom, not only for the nation as far as getting our own 38 to 40% of our own lithium, rare earth minerals from here without having to get them from somewhere else. That cost savings to the America infrastructure is just phenomenal. It also gives more of an incentive to not only look for gas and oil, because now you have this byproduct, which is also creating a service to data industries, the battery industry, and everywhere else. You know, these data centers that we see and we've talking about in our valley area, you know, could they be now battery manufacturer? Could we see Tesla making a, you know, buying up a large portion of our industrial area to have a battery factory because we are producing our own lithium right here? It just opens up the possibilities and the financial impact for our area tremendously. And again, not only that, but the homeowners. You know, not only are you benefiting from the gas and oil extracted from underneath your property, your field that you may be part of, but now this rare earth mineral. And that's something that would need to be put in paper to protect the homeowner, to make sure the homeowners, the landowners benefit from this, as well as the energy company, as well as the battery makers and everyone else. But this looks like it's been vetted through the University of Pittsburgh. I'm sure it would need to be vetted that this technology is as good as they're saying it was, that their test case has been over producing and phenomenal expectations. They're very excited about this. And even Holly Frederick, chair of the Department of Civil and Environmental Engineering at Wilkes University, said the announcement is very exciting. The idea of taking waste brine and extracting something that's valuable resource and the quality that it's able to be used for a secondary purpose alleviates the need to do additional mineral extraction by techniques that are more environmental challenging. Basically, strip mining, right? That's how they get lithium a lot of the times now, strip mining. So if you could extract lithium from the wastewater that you're already extracting gas and oil from, not have to strip mine in other places, pending that this is cheaper and produces more, it's a win-win for everyone. I understand there's a sensitive topic around fracking and such like that. But for, every case where you can point to and say, well, look how devastating this was for this area, there are, hundreds of cases to where it's been done without any issues. And that's something that needs to be monitored by federal agencies and regulations and the state and everyone else involved. But this is very positive outcome. And the fact that it's right here in Susquehanna County, the first of its kind, is even more so. So I'm looking forward to seeing where this goes, and hopefully you can get those gas leases and lithium leases going again up by us. It's 4:22 here at WILK. Time for 2020 traffic and weather together. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. Somebody's talking about the sea monkeys again, so they used to call them brine shrimp. Yeah, that's exactly what they are. They are brine shrimp, and they were great for feeding my saltwater fish. They don't get very big. I guess they do get about a half inch or so, the otherwise called sea monkeys, but they are shrimp brine, the brine shrimp a version of it. So, yep. Somebody also asked, okay, Rob, here's good lithium. What's the difference between lithium for batteries and lithium used for treatment of various neurological conditions, a vitamin supplement? Well, to be quite honest with you, lithium is a nutritional supplement, typically as lithium orinate or lithium aspirate, used in trace amounts for potential mental health benefits like mood stabilization, often doses of 5 to 20 milligrams a day. It's bioavailable, intended for human consumption, and a dietary supplement. There's also battery lithium, which is used in lithium-ion batteries, primarily as lithium compounds like lithium cobalt oxide or lithium iron phosphate. So there are different form altogether, industrial grade, not for consumption, and toxic in raw form. One's used, again, as a supplement. The other one's used for battery manufacturing. And they cannot be overlapped. And again, they're different forms of lithium. So I hope that answers the question there. Somebody said that they're currently not fracking. There's no fracking going on in Northeast Pennsylvania. Well, and I asked where'd they get the brine from for the Susquehanna plant. There has to be something going on somewhere. So the story doesn't get into that, but I bet you with this new increase that it does start again, especially if this is as beneficial or as available as they say it is. Back to our area again, there's a teenage boy wanted for a shooting in Plymouth. Police in Plymouth Borough obtained an arrest warrant charging Shantik Haskins, 16, with firing at least four shots into an occupied vehicle in the area of West Shawnee Avenue and Academy Street earlier this month. Haskins, a Center Avenue, Plymouth, is accused of brandishing a handgun and firing shots at a Toyota occupied by two males just before 4:30 p.m. May 8th, according to court records. Court records say Haskin and the occupants of the vehicle are acquainted. He fired shots as the vehicle turned onto Academy Street. Several projectiles struck the vehicle, smashed the rear window. State police from Troop P, Forensic Services Unit, recovered 4 spent shells at the scene. No injuries were reported. Haskin is charged with multiple counts of aggravated assault, simple assault, firearms not to be carried without a license, illegal possessions of a firearm by a minor, reckless endangerment, propelling missiles into an occupied vehicle. The warrant was issued by District Judge Donald Whitaker of Nanticoke. Court records say Haskin is known to police in Plymouth and is associated with a street gang. Color me shocked. That's my shock voice. And again, 16-year-old carrying a gun, shooting into vehicle, known gang member, our area. You have to be aware, ladies and gentlemen, this is going on. You have to hold your elected officials accountable. If they tell you that this stuff doesn't exist or it's just minor, well, how come we keep reading about it? Now, our law enforcement do a great job, but they need the backing of our elected leaders. You know, you want to hear about these violence interrupters, and we're going to get a consultant to do this, and we're going to bring in this, we're going to bring in that. Where are they? And this goes for all of Northeast Pennsylvania. How come we haven't seen any metrics of them doing a damn thing? But we see plenty of reports of 14, 15, and 16-year-olds with guns shooting other kids in the chest. Drug deals gone wrong. We see plenty of that. Now, law enforcement can know someone's a gang member all they want. They can keep an eye on them all they want. But if we have a judicial revolving door that coddles juveniles, these are no longer juveniles. I mean, how many of these stories do I have to read to you? These are violent criminals that don't care. The most dangerous kind. They have no concept of losing their life. They have no concept of the dangers that they're putting themselves and everyone else in. They have no concept of spending life in prison. They just don't care. They are the most dangerous type of criminal out there. They are young, stupid, and reckless. We need to stop treating them like children. They are not children. They are the most violent, dangerous criminals on our streets. There is nothing more dangerous than a 14, 15, or 16-year-old with an illegal firearm that does not care. They don't care about you. They don't care about your parents. They don't care about your children. They don't care about the baby that's in a car seat in the back of your car. They don't care. They are the most dangerous creatures walking amongst us today. But yet our juvenile justice system wants to coddle them. Our politicians wants to bring in therapists, social workers, and violence interrupters for them. Their parents want to turn a blind eye and say, not my baby. We need to face the facts. They are the most dangerous criminals on our streets right now because they don't care. They don't have a concept of penalty because they've been coddled. They've gotten away with it. They walk the juvenile system and they laugh at us in our faces. They laugh at the judges. They laugh at the district attorneys. They laugh at law enforcement when they walk by them in the streets. I get the message from our local law enforcement. And their hands are tied because they're juveniles. They're just misunderstood youth, never given a chance in a white America. We need to stop coddling these violent criminals and treat them as they are. The most dangerous amongst us right now. It's 4:33 here at WILK. Time for the news with Paul Michaels. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. It's the point of the show where we honor our heroes in law enforcement across the Commonwealth on this day, May 16th. On this day, we have 5 who made the ultimate sacrifice. We're going to start with Police Officer Stephen Charles Plum Jr., Warrington Township Police Department in 2022. Suffered a fatal heart attack after having responded to a mutual aid request involving a barricaded suspect at the 1300 block of Nervac Road in Warminster Township during a previous shift. Subject began involved in a domestic dispute, was armed with a knife, Officer Plume responded to a mutual aid request, stood as part of the arrest team while controlling his canine for approximately 75 minutes before the man was taken into custody. Following the barricade, Officer Plume responded to several addition non-routine calls, conducted daily performance training with his canine, his partner. As he was preparing for work, he suffered a fatal heart attack and collapsed. Sergeant Michael Stephen Monick, Sharon Police Department in 1990, suffered a fatal heart attack while struggling with a suspect he was attempting to arrest for drunk driving. He was investigating the scene of an accident in North Water Avenue and Wilson Street. Subject resisted arrest, attempted to arrest him. He began to experience chest pains, collapsed at the scene. He was transported to a local hospital where he passed away shortly. Philadelphia Police Department Marin C. Cannon, 1919, died as a result of complications due to the Spanish influenza while performing her assigned duties during the influenza pandemic. And Patrolman Anthony Havlety, McKeesport Police Department, 1917, succumbed to injuries sustained the previous day when his motorcycle struck a streetcar track, crashed in the intersection on Walnut Street and Penny Street. He served with the McKeesport Police Department for 12 years, survived by his wife and four children. And Chief of Police Thomas Guess, Vernon Borough Police Department in 1907, was shot and killed by a former police chief. He had been arrested for public drunkenness, a citizen who helped subdue the suspect, who was taken to the cell of the City Police Department. As Chief Guess attempted to search the prisoner, the man produced a revolver, had been hidden in his sleeve, and shot him once in the head, killing him. And those are our five from here in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania on this day. It is 4:41 here at WIL, okay? Here's the Storm Tracker 16 forecast. Tonight, partly cloudy, a low of 64. There are some storms that will come through our area. Tomorrow, partly sunny with a chance of a thunderstorm, a high of 82. Sunday, cloudy and cooler with a chance of showers, high of 65. It is currently 79 degrees here at 4:42 at your official weather station, WILK. Time for the NEPA Premium Perks. Enjoy this half-off deal for PA Party Rentals. For your holiday party planning, get a $200 gift certificate for only $100. Tables, chairs, tents, linens, and more. Delivery and setup. Multiple rentals at discounted prices. It's graduation season. Summer's here. Plan your party. Visit getmyperks.com for all the details. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. It's 4:45, 79 degrees on this Friday, May 16th. 2025 is time for Today in History, because how do we know where we're going until we remember where we've been on this day, May 16th? Let's see what we have. 1775, Hannahstown resolves. In Hannahstown, Pennsylvania, settlers issued a declaration opposing British authority, pledging to defend their rights even by force if necessary. This is one of the earliest organized colonial protests against British rule, preceding the Declaration of Independence by over a year. It was 1775. Pennsylvania stood up and told the British, not on our watch, not here, not now. Good for you. 1866, introduction of the nickel. U.S. Congress passed legislation establishing the 5-cent coin made of nickel and copper, replacing the earlier silver half dime. 1868, President Andrew Johnson impeachment trial. The U.S. Senate fell one vote short of the 2-3 majority needed to convict President Andrew Johnson, allowing him to remain in office. 1918, the Sedition Act passed. Congress enacted the Sedition Act, criminalizing disloyal or abusive language about the U.S. government during World War I. It was repealed in 1920. 1929, the first Academy Awards, the inaugural Oscar ceremony, took place in Hollywood, marking the beginning of the annual tradition honoring cinematic achievements. In 1997, presidential apology for the Tuskegee syphilis study. President Bill Clinton formally apologized to the victims of the Tuskegee syphilis study acknowledging the government unethical treatment of African-American men in the study. Some other notable events, 1770, royal marriage. Marie Antoinette married the future King Louis the 16th of France. 1943, the end of the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising. German forces crushed the Jewish resistance in Warsaw, Poland, and destroyed the Great Synagogue. 1960, first working laser. 1960, physicist Theodore Maiman operated the first functional laser, a ruby laser, at Hughes Research Laboratory in California. It's interesting because, you know, I've spent a lot of time, and I'll be down at the Naval Academy next week. There's actually monuments on the floor where the speed of light was first measured. The speed of light was first measured at the United States Naval Academy in Annapolis. And there are stainless steel plates and two plaques on either side above where the laboratory was down below. And it goes for probably about 30 yards, 40 yards. And there's plaques on either side. And it's the above ground station of down below where the laboratory was, where the first time the speed of light was ever measured. Interesting. If you ever go down there, check it out. 1966, start of the China's Cultural Revolution. Chinese Communist Party issued a May 16th notification marking the beginning of the Cultural Revolution. That was 1966. 1975, first woman to summit Everest. Japanese mountaineer Junko Tobai became the first woman to reach the summit of Mount Everest. Some notable birthdays on this day. 1801, William H. Stewart, U.S. Secretary of State, known for purchasing Alaska from Russia. 1919, Liberace, flamboyant American pianist and entertainer. 1953, Pierce Brosnan, Irish-American actor, best known for portraying James Bond. In 1966, Janet Jackson, American singer, songwriter, and actress, born on this day. Happy birthday. And if you have a birthday today, it seems that I wish you the best for your birthday. Somebody texted in, Derek thanked in my definition, my explaining lithiums, the two different types, the neutral supplement and the type you use for batteries. So Rob says, it seems the police officers die from fatal heart attacks often. Could it be due to the constant stress? Just wondering. You know, have a nice weekend. Well, you have a nice weekend too. And most police departments now have a heart bill just for that, because of that. You know, our bodies, and listen, there's a lot that goes involved with it. Shift work, the fact that we don't eat properly, the fact that we, you know, don't have the time. Although we should, and it should be. What amazes me, and a lot of departments do the right thing. And you would think they more so do. The NYPD is the largest police department in I think the world. And you go to firearms qualification twice a year, or you're supposed to go twice a year. Sometimes it doesn't happen. Sometimes you only go once a year. There are no really available private ranges in New York City for law enforcement to use to practice their skill set. The department really does not provide you with ammunition if you want to go up to the range on your own time to practice shooting. And, you know, firearm ranges in and around New York City are very few and far between, even outside the city limits, where residency requirements are for police departments. You think a police department as large as New York City and as focused media-wise as New York City and the NYPD, they would encourage their officers to be proficient with their firearms as they could be, to provide opportunity and facilities to practice whenever they want, either at their own expense or say, hey, here's 100 rounds, come whenever you want and shoot, you know, to perfect your skill set. A lot of departments also offer, you know, time to go to a gym and work out as part of your duty, as part of your assignment. You know, there's paid time to where you get paid. A lot of departments don't. And then you have shift work. I mean, when I had swing shifts, which is basically you work a week of nights, a week of afternoons, and then a week of mornings. A lot of you guys do that as well in your jobs. It's a little different, you know, when at the drop of a dime, you are going from, your body is going from 0 to 60. You know, you could be sitting in your vehicle, you know, really not doing much of anything, driving around and such, and next thing you know, there's a major event that takes a toll on your body after a while. When your body rushes adrenaline and then comes down, and then rushes adrenaline again and comes down and rushes adrenaline and comes down, that's a lot on the body physically. And it's not only law enforcement. There are a lot of professions that do that. You know, members in our military, you know, pilots, fighter pilots, where, you know, it's probably one of the most stressful things on your body you can imagine, being in a dogfight in a fighter. Far more so than most things I could tell you about. But that's why a lot of departments have the heart bill, because it is known that it is part of that. So hope that answers that question there. And, you know, a lot of other people too. Nurses suffer from a lot of it as well. Very similar physical attributes to an emergency room nurse, a trauma nurse, as there is to law enforcement. They go through a very similar effect on the body. So you'd be surprised of the amount of strokes and heart attacks that nurses come through, especially ER and trauma nurses, med-surg nurses, people who are dealing with emergency situations, you know, on a rapidly basis, where you could be sitting there charting and next thing you know, there's 3 gunshot victims coming in, or a child that was, you know, had their leg amputated in a car accident. It takes a toll on you. So I'd want to throw that out there as well. It's 4:54 here at WILK. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show. Did you hear this story about the missing hiker that was found safe after weeks, surviving weeks, in the Sierra Nevada mountains, about halfway between Yosemite and the Sequoia Kings Canyon National Parks? Woman went hiking, got caught in a freak snowstorm that was up there, wandered around for a while, and ended up finding a closed cabin and seeking shelter in that cabin. Now, there were some staples in that cabin. There were obviously blankets and such like that. But because of the snow, no one was able to get up there, or no one was able to find her. She was gone for a few weeks, missing. Family thought the worst. The individual who owned the cabin, their summer vacation cabins, leaves it open for this very purpose, because he knows how treacherous the area is, knows that snow is very unpredictable for the area, and it's not the first time that shelter has been sought. Now, if you go out west to a lot of these places, there are, especially mountaineering, there are these types of shelters that are just for this, for hikers, for mountaineers who get caught in unpredictable weather where they can ride out the storm. You know, there's usually some canned goods. Sometimes there's a radio where they can call for help and such like that. But this was a private, you know, cabin that was used for summer vacations. The 27-year-old Georgia woman was missing for nearly 3 weeks in the remote wilderness. And when the owner of the cabin was finally able to get up there, because of the snow was cleared and started to melt, she ran out of the cabin, surprised him, first of all. He's someone in the cabin. You know, she was hunkered down for 3 weeks, and just grabbed him and hugged him. Happy to see another person, happy to realize they've been found. And I guess it kind of dawns on you that you will be recovered. She just popped out, didn't say a word, just ran up, and all she wanted was a hug. Gutierrez, the owner of the cabin, said during a news conference. It was a pretty surreal moment, and that's when I realized who it was. Because he realized that this woman was missing up there, and that's why they were headed up there to the cabins to check and to see if there was anything they can do to help find them. But the local sheriff had announced it was scaling back search efforts. 2 days later, she emerged from the cabin. Because they searched 600 square miles with no luck. And they were hampered by heavy snow blocking many roadways. So good news coming out of that area. And I'm sure it'll be a story for her to tell her children and grandchildren down the road. But a happy ending to all involved. Listen, even the searchers in this, where there are, it seems like dozens of them that were involved in this, searching for 600 square miles, having to call off the search because of nasty weather, and then, you know, her being found a couple of days later. Good news all around. Good news.